You know, Steve was part of that legendary defense, and they had some characters. So they had some guys who were very, very colorful and very good. Steve was one of those glue guys who did his job, was hard to block, who made the big plays without a lot of flair and fanfare, and he's playing next to Dan Hampton and Dent and Singletary and gosh, you know, just these iconic guys. But he was a glue guy, and I respect that as a coach.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Final hour here for this Friday evening, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was the voice of Tony Dungy, Hall of Fame coach, after being a good football player in his own right, but went on to lead those Indianapolis Colts to a Super Bowl championship over the Chicago Bears. And so a guy like Devin Hester, who Tony Dungy decided to go ahead and kick it to after convincing himself it wasn't a good idea, and at the last second, last moment, he apparently changed his mind, went ahead and kicked it to Devin Hester, and the ridiculous one himself made Tony Dungy and the Colts pay for it. But Colts went on to win that Super Bowl. But that was Tony Dungy talking about Steve McMichael and his role in the Bears defense, the glue guy that he was. And I agree with the description of Steve McMichael as a glue guy, but he was also a playmaker. You know, he's a playmaking glue guy within that Bears defense that was just so chock full of playmakers at every single level, especially in the front seven, of course. But for this entire class that's going in here with Dwight Freeney and Randy Gradishar and Devin Hester, Andre Johnson, Mongo McMichael, Julius Peppers, Patrick Willis, these are guys that, you know, of course, amongst the greatest at their position, their individual position within the sport, and really the main one that I would say was sort of the freakish athlete in the group, just the size, the speed, the skill for the position was Julius Peppers. And each team in the National Football League, you know, of course, everyone is an above average athlete of above average stature when you're just kind of comparing guys on the roster to just standard folks walking the street. But each locker room of great athletes has individual players who just set a different standard, who move differently, who are, you know, so off the charts in their ability to play, to perform, and just the physical specimen that they are. Julius Peppers is one of those guys, you know, a one percenter amongst one percenters when it comes to being a physical specimen. You go out there to Bears training camp these days, you still have your eyes peeled for who some of those guys are that are on the field right now. They're individuals that occasionally you just look at them and say, yeah, they just look different. Even amongst all these space aliens out there, there's one who's just built a little bit different than everybody else. And every roster will have a couple of those guys. Julius Peppers was certainly one of those in every locker room that he was in. And while I mentioned going out there to Bears training camp, make sure you recognize that Bears training camp coverage is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. And for the recognition that Julius Peppers got throughout his career, it's one thing for those magnificent physical tools to come to the fore and to be recognized for what he brought to the table as an athlete. But, you know, when he entered the NFL in 2002. My rookie year was 2001, so I was always kind of paying close attention to who the other D linemen were that entered the league around that same time. And for Julius Peppers, he was one of these guys where we'd seen a couple of tight ends of a similar age, of that similar vintage, who played basketball in college and then, you know, end up playing tight end in the National Football League. And they're both, you know, at least the immediate ones that come to mind are both in the Pro Football Hall of Fame as well, of a similar age to Julius Peppers. But, you know, to be a college basketball player, major college basketball player at the University of North Carolina, that brand that it represents in that sport, like North Carolina is a basketball school. Of course, MJ was a star there amongst a bunch of other guys who went on to be basketball Hall of Famers. Julius Peppers playing college basketball for UNC, but then also playing college football, choosing the football route, going into the NFL and putting a Hall of Fame career together, shows the not only the physical abilities that are there, the one percenter level attributes that he has that he was just kind of given by God, but then you still have to do something with it. I was talking earlier to Lawrence Holmes and Dan Bernstein when they were playing some clips from Rod Marinelli and just, you know, talking about the role of a coach. Mike Tomlin was a clip they played as well. The role of a coach in the development of a player and being what I like to term as a football teacher and how you try to get the most out of the guys that you coach. But the physical abilities, the attributes that Julius Peppers brought to the table, that wasn't everything that rounded his game out, because you had, especially at that size, you had to play the game hard. He certainly did that. He was that combination. There's a reason that Bruce Smith was the one who presented Julius Peppers. He was the one who let Julius Peppers know he was getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, because Julius Peppers was probably the closest comp to Bruce Smith that we had seen in decades for what Bruce Smith was. The size, the speed, the power, the versatility at the position that Julius Peppers brought to the table. Bruce Smith was the guy of the previous generation who was able to do all those things, who could rush off either edge, who could be a tackle over either guard as well, and feel so unblockable because of all those things that he brought to the table, but also to have the skill to do it at a high level. He finished his career fourth all time in sacks with 159.5. Julius Peppers, the only player in NFL history with at least 100 career sacks and 10 or more interceptions. So that showed the versatility that he had for the position as well. Ended up second all time with 52 career forced fumbles. And when he retired, he ranked sixth all time amongst defensive players with 266 games played. You think of, like, sometimes the description is, if a guy is a track star and he comes out and plays football, like, all right, did he have track speed or did he have football speed? And when you think of guys who play some other sports who come over, like I was referencing, you know, the idea of playing basketball and then coming and playing tight end, that's one thing. Like, yeah, you know, Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez, yeah, you got to be physical when you come play tight end. But you at least get to go out and run pass routes on occasion too. But to have that well-rounded degree of athleticism, like J.J. Watt is kind of, as Julius Peppers was transitioning out of the NFL and getting long in the tooth in his career, was when J.J. Watt was that latest and greatest guy who combined just remarkable size and speed and power and the all-around ability to do so many different things on the football field. J.J. Watt, a former college tight end before transitioning over to the defensive side of the football, but certainly seems like the brand of athlete that could have played college basketball at a high level if he would have committed to that as well. Julius Peppers was the Carolina Panthers franchise leader in sacks with 97, forced fumbles with 34, and blocked field goals with 8. And that shows how hard he played the game, how he didn't take snaps off. He was one of four players to record 10 seasons with 10-plus sacks, and the other three are all Hall of Famers. So now Pep going into the Hall of Fame as well. He was the 02 Defensive Rookie of the Year, had 18 tackles for loss, which led the NFL in 2006, 719 career tackles, 186 quarterback hits, made 9 Pro Bowls, 3-time first-team All-Pro, 3 times on the second team, all-decade team in both the 2000s and the 2010s. So, I mean, the production is astronomical, and you don't produce as a defensive lineman in the National Football League if you were not going full tilt. A lot of credit to Julius Peppers for what he accomplished and what he was, because a lot of those remarkable physical abilities, there's a lot of guys who come into the NFL who have a lot of physical attributes. There's some guys who maybe have a little bit less in the God-given physical ability that sort of overachieve to a certain extent to make the Hall of Fame, but you know, it goes to show, you know, in a Randy Moss sort of way, where the idea that sort of trailed Julius Peppers a decent bit was, oh, man, he is so physically gifted that he's probably capable of even more. just because of how remarkable an athlete he is. That was one of those things that sort of always trailed him. Like, oh, well, it doesn't look like he's trying that hard. He makes some of this look so easy. And so could he be doing even more? And that just goes to show how much respect, how much deference there was for the level of athlete that Julius Peppers was during his playing career. Just a remarkable physical specimen that combined everything. If you were going to make the quintessential or perhaps even the perfect defensive lineman, then that's what you would shape them like Julius Peppers. You would play them like Julius Peppers. He brought everything to the table. The 312-644-6767 is the phone number to give me a call here. 312-644-6767. Got Mikey on the line right now from Wilmington wanting to talk about Pep on his way into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What's happening, Mikey?
What's happening, Big Ant?
What's up, man?
Hey, man. Julius Peppers was a athlete times 10 because when he was in college, the basketball program had to wait for him to get done with football, and then the team became whole, and they were impossible to beat as well. Julius Peppers is one of the greatest athletes that I've ever seen in my life, and I am a jock. I've seen them all. I'm 61 years old. Julius Peppers is where he belongs in the Hall of Fame, and College Basketball Hall of Fame, and if he chose to play basketball, he'd be in the NBA Hall of Fame, or still playing.
An absolutely spectacular physical specimen and playmaker, and when you're as good at the craft as Julius Peppers was, when you can play such a wide variety of positions and do so at a high level, you know, just think about if you, at this point in your life, decided, if you've been right-handed for all these years, anybody who's tried to write left-handed, you can maybe hold a pen or a pencil the correct way if you kind of train yourself to do it. But then to actually try and form sentences, to write letters correctly, just doesn't make any sense. Your body, your hand can't quite sustain that. Same thing with throwing. Like, you know, we saw some clips of Tyson Bagent throwing the football left-handed in pregame warmups last night. It shows what a coordinated athlete Tyson Bagent is, because any of you who throw right-handed, you very likely cannot throw left-handed. And for an athlete like Julius Peppers to be able to rush the quarterback from either edge, to be able to play the run over four or in some cases five of the different offensive linemen, with having either hand in the dirt and taking the steps in the proper way that you need to, combining all those attributes and coordination that's necessary to perform that at a high level, it certainly goes to show the level, the brand of athlete that Julius Peppers probably even continues to be. You know, there's anybody who could continue to play the game at this point who's going to be on that stage tomorrow. Julius Peppers might be one of those individuals who could get that done. I mentioned earlier that I've been able to been fortunate to interact with a bunch of guys who had Hall of Fame caliber careers, like Olin Krutz, who hasn't made it in yet. But I think a lot of us are not only hopeful, but expecting that that's going to be the case for the great Bear Center, who does a bunch of work with us here at The Score. But there've also been players who did make it in, but had to wait for a long time. That's one of those things that relates to the conversation that, you know, I was having with one of the callers a bit earlier in the show. And I bring it up with Howard Balzer when I have him on in a few minutes, because he's a part of the Hall of Fame voting process, because it's an extremely difficult Hall of Fame to get into. I'm not in any Halls of Fame. You know, I had a nice career at Iowa. I'm not a Hall of Famer in the Iowa Athletic Department. I didn't win any Heismans. I wasn't a first-team All-American. Just a good player, all-Big Ten player on some bad football teams. Mostly bad football teams. We were okay on occasion. My high school doesn't have a Hall of Fame. Your Bowling Brook High School does not have a Hall of Fame. We got a Wall of Fame. So, yeah, I'm on the Wall of Fame for multiple sports, for my exploits in football and in track and field. You know, I was an athlete in basketball. I wasn't a great basketball player. But I'm not in any Halls of Fame. My wife is in the Hall of Fame at her high school. I'm not in any Halls of Fame. It's not easy. It's difficult to get into a Hall of Fame. I'm assuming if Bolingbrook High School does actually start a legit Hall of Fame at some point, I'm sure I'll make it in there. Rated Pride, by the way. But when you compare some of the greatest of all time who've done this, and to see, I've been able to see, to witness in person, guys choking back tears just in thinking about the frustration that they've had by not getting in. And it is so hard because the selection narrows the process down so stringently. And, you know, the 100th anniversary of the National Football League, when they decided to, let's try to work through some of this backlog of players, because so many guys have been waiting for their opportunity, waiting for their turn to get that call to the Hall. I was really glad when they decided to do that, because it did allow some of the players who, you know, were wondering, is this going to happen in my lifetime? Is this going to happen ever? And you did see the opportunity for more of the guys to get in. But, you know, for a player like Andre Reed, like, it was back in 2012. I got to go to the very first NFL Honors that was taking place. And, you know, I got to talk to guys like Chris Carter and Andre Reed and Warren Moon, and, you know, kind of ran the gamut of various personalities in the football world. And, you know, a guy like Warren Moon, who was already in the Hall of Fame, a guy like Andre Reed, who was still waiting for his turn, Chris Carter, who was still waiting for his turn, and the frustration that each of them felt, especially when you become a finalist. And, you know, like, Andre Reed was on a variety of Super Bowl teams, and he was a teammate with James Lofton, some of those amazing Buffalo Bills offenses. And, I mean, I was struck, and, you know, been around the football world a lot, man, but I was just struck by how frustrated Andre Reed was, struck by how frustrated Chris Carter was with the notion that what they had done, the resume that they put out there as football players during their playing days, throughout their career, being obviously amongst the all-time greats, but not getting that opportunity, not being selected, not getting the gold jacket up to that point, and how that made them feel. It made, you know, they felt a certain degree of denial for this process of not feeling accepted would probably be a term I would use, a phrase I would use for that as well. And eventually each of them have gotten in. And now, you know, it does seem like in some ways staying in the public light seems like something that impacts some of the decision-making here also. And it does seem that there's more and more players now who, you know, see that opportunity to maybe be in the media, to maybe stay in the public consciousness is a smart way to go about it, just because, you know, it's one of those things, especially if you weren't on a team that won a bunch of Super Bowls, if you weren't a player who, you know, had a bunch of MVP performances or played one of the most prominent positions on the field, then, you know, it can be very easy for folks to sort of forget about the greatness that you had out there during your playing days, and, you know, turns into an out of sight, out of mind situation. And even for guys like Andre Reed, it didn't take long before folks just said, oh, well, the game has changed. You see the statistics of some of these other receivers as they're coming up and coming through the league, and you start to sort of get knocked down a few pegs and work down the notches of where you rank amongst the all-time greats, then it gets more and more difficult on an annual basis. But, you know, to be able to talk to some of those guys who've been amongst the greatest of their peers, the one percenters of the one percenters who end up making the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, it just goes to show everything that they have put into it. And at least for me and the experience I've been able to be sort of adjacent to the Hall of Fame level greatness that I've been able to throughout my playing career and my media career, it's certainly an appreciation for the guys who are going to walk across that stage tomorrow or have their loved one walk across the stage on their behalf, because it's well earned. There's no doubt about that. This process is one that, you know, as much as it's an elite process to actually make the Pro Football Hall of Fame, to be one of those one percenters to get to do it, the members of the media who actually get to be a part of selecting the Hall of Famers is a fairly elite crew as well. And Howard Balzer is one of those individuals who gets to do it. So let's take a time out. We'll come back and sort of delve into what the process involves, what it entails, and how difficult it ends up being. Cannot wait to get his perspective, just to talk through what this is like, because as difficult as it is for the players who are hopeful about getting in, there's a lot of difficulty that goes on in that room to make these final selections amongst these people who have performed at the peak of this industry for so many years. We'll talk to Howard Balzer about the selection process and get his thoughts on what we will see tomorrow on that stage in Canton, Ohio. We'll do that next. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
He was so coachable. I just can't tell you what a pleasure it was coaching and working with Julius and changing things, and he'd listen and, you know, and try it. And that's all you ask a man to do, because his skill level is so good. And
we're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
The voice of Rod Marinelli, one of the great defensive coaches in pro football history. He had the opportunity to coach Julius Peppers and a variety of other outstanding defensive linemen during his time in the sport. He's been held a number of other positions in coaching football also. One of the quintessential football teachers. I was talking about a bit earlier in the day on the Midday Show with Bernstein and Holmes. And we're hoping to catch up with Howard Balzer here any moment. But we've got the gold jacket ceremony going on right now, where the Hall of Famers, the class is getting enshrined tomorrow. This is the opportunity where now they are actually getting their gold jacket for the first time. And so there's, you know, they're on stage and everyone's there witnessing it and watching it play out. And since Howard Balzer is one of the people who votes on the Pro Football Hall of Fame, he gets to be there for the gold jacket ceremony. So that's going on right now. We'll see whether or not we end up catching up with Howard Balzer tonight. But actually, Alex Kuhn, you had an opportunity. You kind of got a brief snippet of that from Howard. Like, what did he describe that was actually taking place on stage with Devin Hester and Deion Sanders?
Yeah, I was going to tell you that the update that I got from Howard is Devin Hester just got his gold jacket. So this is the dinner where they give him the jackets, of course. And Deion Sanders is the one who put it on him. And Howard's been doing this for a long time. I heard Matt Spiegel earlier today talk about Howard, a blast from the past. He's been coming on the airwaves all across the country talking football for decades and decades. And this is the guy who was the original draft analyst when the draft was first televised on ESPN. So he has been around the game for a long time. And the words that he said, Devin was as emotional as any player I have ever seen at this event when Deion Sanders put that gold jacket on him.
That's saying something. That's definitely saying something. And Devin, having played his college career at the U, you know, for the Miami Hurricanes, but then he and Deion have been so close over the years. Deion, Florida State, Devin, Miami, but just being there from the state of Florida and how much football has meant to that state. I got to take a flight with Warren Sapp not too long ago, and he even talking about the time that he still spends going to high school games in Florida, rooting for colleges all around the state of Florida because of what football, especially youth football, high school football, means to that particular state. And Deion and Devin have been very close for a really long time. And, you know, it's a part of where, you know, Devin Hester, when he'd get out into the open field and he would, you know, hold the football up just like primetime would teach him, and he'd hit the high step just like Deion used to do as well. I mean, if Deion wasn't maybe the greatest cover corner of all time, he would have been one of the greatest returners. I mean, he was one of the greatest returners of all time, but you know, part of the reason that the amount of yardage and touchdowns that Deion Sanders would have had during his playing career was negated a little bit was because he spent part of the time playing baseball, so he didn't play every football game throughout his magnificent NFL career that he would have potentially had the opportunity to play in, because he would occasionally miss some football games while the baseball season was still going on. But then also, because he was so fantastic as a defensive back, they didn't always use him as much as a punt returner and as a kick returner as they perhaps could have, because you can only do so much. He's playing receiver, he's playing DB, he's playing baseball, and oh yeah, he can return the football also. But they had they have as close a bond as you could hope to have with anyone. And so, you know, the pride that Deion Sanders has always felt and everything Devin Hester has accomplished, no surprise there. And there's actually a clip on social media if you wanted to search on Twitter for that. I just put Deion Sanders, Devin Hester in Twitter, and Aaron Wilson actually had a tweet with a video of it just in showing that embrace that Alex was just describing for you there. Was talking a lot about Julius Peppers in the previous segment here. And he as well was one of the luminaries who, as Mullion Haw, have been in Canton for the last few days here and catching up with everyone that they could. And, you know, they're not necessarily the only ones who have been in Canton, but it seems like everybody who is in Canton have been on with Mullion Haw. Our continued coverage of everything football, especially leading into the Bears' debut of Hard Knocks, will continue rolling on The Score here. So I feel like I should also inform you that you've got an opportunity to join Parkinson Spiegel this Tuesday from 2 to 6 p.m. at The Wall at Marcus Gurney Cinema to register to win prizes and tickets and enjoy specials on food and beverages all day. Then at 8 p.m., enjoy the premiere of Hard Knocks on The Wall's big screen. Admission is always free at The Wall. So that'll be an opportunity as we transition out of Hall of Fame conversation and transition into the Caleb Williams portion of the evening, of the events of the preseason, if you will. That'll be an event where folks will be able to go and check that out live and in person. But Julius Peppers was on with Mullion Haw earlier today, as they've had everyone in Canton seemingly on the show with them while they've been there in person. Here's a good meaty chunk of the time that Mullion Haw spent with Pep in discussing his career and his enshrinement into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Self, Julius Peppers, we've been looking for you all weekend, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to see you. So Panthers, Bears, Packers, yep. Panthers. Mm-hmm. What did your time in Chicago mean to you in terms of your career?
So, I appreciate all three stops. Let me say that first. Chicago was a special place. The city, the people, the team. And they changed my life. They changed my life in more ways than one. So it was a special place. I enjoyed my time there. Lovey, Rob Marinelli, all the teammates. It was a brotherhood. Like, that was a real brotherhood in the locker room and in the community. So I love the Bears forever. And I'm not necessarily going in as a Bear. I'm not going in as any team, I don't think. You just go in as a player. So I appreciate all three teams, but I love Chicago, man.
You know, I always wondered, did playing with the Bears help your kind of your kind of public perception throughout the league? Because mm-hmm. everyone knew you were amazing at mm-hmm. Carolina, but when you got to Chicago, you were more of a national entity than you had been.
So, like I said, the Chicago changed my life in more ways than one, and that was one of them. And that's what I was looking for when I was leaving Carolina. So coming up there did boost my notoriety, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the city and the time that I had there.
So we talked to Rod Marinelli. He told us the story that everyone knows well about the night of free agency.
Yeah.
Him and Lovey and Cliff Stein show up at your door. Was it midnight? Tell us what you remember about that experience.
So yeah, it was. It was right on the. It was right on the dot. Midnight. My guy Carl is right here. He was with me. And actually, it was at the airport. So they had called me and was like, he was like, Lovey and the Bears, they at the airport. So we went out there. It was right at 12. We flew up the next morning, went to Hallis Hall and everything. We did the tour and all of that. And it was a quick process. It was boom. It was less than, I think, free agency started at 12 o'clock. I think I was signed by 12 the next day. So 12 hours.
Yeah.
See, I always figured that was a done deal when they showed up. But I'm glad we're all covering it.
No,
that's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, well, it kind of was. Yeah. It kind of was, but, you know, we had to go through the formalities of it, but yeah.
So you guys came so close. You were on a defense that has now a couple of Hall of Famers on it, Urlacher, you.
Yeah.
Lance Briggs has a case to make. What about that defense made it special in your mind and played for Lovey? What do you remember about those?
Like I said, it was a brotherhood in the locker room. I have never been a part of a locker room like that. When I came in, Urlacher was bigger than life, right? And he was just a normal guy in the locker room, you know, playing the games with all of the younger guys, just including everybody you felt included. And another guy that I think has a chance to get here is Charles Tillman, you know. And that was, you know, great defense, probably the best defense that I ever played on, just because of everybody holding each other accountable and just everybody trusting each other and wanting to work hard for each other.
When you look at this honor, you know, they say it's humbling. They say it changes you a little bit because you're now in the club where no one gets caught. You've now made the ultimate team.
Well, yeah, and it is humbling. It's an honor. Never thought that I would be here, to be honest with you, if I'm being honest. I never thought about something like this. So I'm just happy to be here with one of my, I'm happy to be going in with one of my former teammates, Devin, over there, great Devin Hester, as you guys know him. So, yeah, it's just a great weekend.
Julius, congratulations. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate y'all.
You could have gone into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Well, I wouldn't have been here. Well,
you know which one you
are? This is where I belong at, right here.
You had some skills, though. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julius.
Appreciate y'all.
There's so much that goes into the full weekend. You hear all the busyness, the festivities, all the hubbub that's kind of going on behind and around Mully and Hawes. They're interviewing the different folks. And one of the things that ends up happening, I've been able to talk to a few different speech writers over the years who work with some of these Hall of Famers as they prepare for their Pro Football Hall of Fame speech, because this is the moment, this is the sort of iconic delivery that everyone hopes for that'll, you know, encapsulate what their career was and their opportunity to thank so many people who kind of helped them get to this point. Perhaps if there's even a score to settle or crack some funny jokes about things, then you'll get some of that in there as well. So there's months and months of writing and editing and rewriting and practicing that goes into this. That's where sometimes the delivery will seem a little bit rehearsed, because it has been. They've been rehearsing this for a long time in most cases. And, you know, it's really, in a lot of cases, the last best opportunity for someone to sort of address who they feel like they've been and what they feel like they were as a football player and now as a Hall of Famer as they get ready to walk across that stage. And, you know, Jared Payton will have a unique opportunity to present a second individual for enshrinement, as he did with his father, the GOAT, Walter Payton, Sweetness, and now he's going to get an opportunity to do that for Steve McMichael tomorrow as well. So, you know, I can't imagine anyone who'd be better to be able to deliver that than JP. So I'm definitely looking forward to watching what message he delivers about Mongo as well. One of the things that happened last night leading into the game itself, the Hall of Fame game, was as Joe Buck opened the show and they had his mic open over the PA to everyone there at Tom Benson Stadium, but the TV broadcast as well as the sort of event there on the field in the stadium itself opened up with Caleb Williams and C.J. Stroud being on the Jumbotron at the stadium, being on the television in a split screen next to each other. One of the things that Joe Buck said was these are two individuals that will be hoping to be here being enshrined in the Hall of Fame themselves at some point down the road, and each of them no doubt have those types of aspirations. C.J. Stroud just put together what might have been the greatest rookie quarterback season any of us have ever seen in the history of ever. And now a lot of folks are anticipating that Caleb Williams may have the opportunity to deliver something like that for the Bears this season as well. I've had an opportunity to talk to his collegiate coach, Lincoln Riley, a few times since the Bears drafted Caleb. And one of those most recent times was last week in Indianapolis. Some of it was off the air, some of it was on the air. We'll take a time out, come back, and let you hear directly from the coach who helped Caleb Williams, who led Caleb Williams toward that Heisman Trophy he won and was just the latest and greatest quarterback, who ended up being the number one overall pick after playing for Lincoln Riley in college. But Lincoln Riley shared a few thoughts about Caleb that we'll play back for you after a timeout here. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Do you see greatness in Caleb Williams?
You know, I haven't seen enough yet, but people I respect who have watched and said this guy has it, and that's what it's all about. It's poise and dominance in those big-time situations. I don't think people would have said, I see greatness in Tom Brady in his first 3 weeks on the job. But he had those things, and that's what you're looking for. That's what I want to find out. Does Caleb Williams, he's got talent, he's got arm strength, he's got accuracy, athleticism. Does he have that it that you need in those big moments? That's what we're going to have to see.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's more of Tony Dungy with Mully and Haw from there in Canton, Ohio, as we all prepare to watch this current Hall of Fame class get enshrined tomorrow from Tom Benson's Hall of Fame Stadium. And he referenced, you know, no one in the first 3 weeks would have said they saw greatness in Tom Brady. I would argue the first 3 years, even though he had a Super Bowl championship by that point. But, you know, it took a while. He continued to refine his game. He continued to improve and evolve. And that's what the all-time greats end up doing to some extent, to a large extent. In all these different cases, how does your game continue to evolve? How do you continue to refine yourself? The version of Patrick Mahomes that just won this Super Bowl was a very different version of Patrick Mahomes that was the NFL MVP in his second year in the league. You know, but he has shown that requisite work ethic necessary to continue to do that and to make his game suit whatever situation it needs to suit to be the best version of himself for the Chiefs. It's part of the question that'll be there for Caleb Williams as he continues his path towards trying to become a great player for the Chicago Bears. I had a chance last week to have my latest conversation with his old college coach from both Oklahoma and USC, Lincoln Riley. And Lincoln Riley has put a variety of quarterbacks into the National Football League after playing for him and being in his offensive system. Caleb, just the latest amongst that group to not only win the Heisman Trophy, but go on to be the number one overall pick, as was the case with Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray and now Caleb Williams. Jalen Hurts, you know, has gone on to success after he transferred to Oklahoma to play for Lincoln Riley as well. He just didn't win the Heisman or become the number one overall pick, but he's not done too bad so far in the NFL. But here's a brief comment that Lincoln Riley had in response to a question I asked about his system and the transition from Caleb Williams to his upcoming quarterback, Miller Moss.
Yeah, you know, we had a little bit of a test drive in the Holiday Bowl, yeah. And obviously not just Miller, but really a lot of the young players at all positions. You know, we really featured in that game, and the guys handled it, you know, obviously really well in the win over Louisville. And so it was honestly an advantage to be able to have that opportunity, kind of the way that it played out. And yeah, listen, I've kind of, you know, been lucky enough to be a part of it before we have the high profile player that leaves and goes into the whatever pick in the draft. And then everybody's like, oh my God, what are you going to do now? Like, it's well, the next guy's going to come up, you know, like that's this college football. It's like how it works. So, you know, I'm excited about it. Sure, we'll be different. I mean, we were different in that game. We'll be certainly more different with whoever ends up being the guy, whether it's Miller or Jaden or whoever it is. We'll be different because of the skill sets that we're going to have. And so, but that's like the fun to me, is like adapting to what you have, what can your advantages be, and how can you put a product on the field no matter what your skill sets are that can go out and play at a high level. And so that's been our mindset. Yeah, we'll probably fair to say we'll be a little bit more on script. Yeah, probably that's you know, fair to say. But now Chicago fans are going to obviously love watching Caleb. He's phenomenal talent, and we had a great run together.
You've seen the success that Lincoln Riley quarterbacks have had, not only at the collegiate level, but in the National Football League. And his system isn't always one that allows the transition to the pro game to be easy, because he does have a lot of college principles. What would still be defined or thought of as college principles within the system, certainly the verbiage is a big thing that stands out there. But he's begun to make a bit of a transition in the way he operates in that regard at the college level also. A lot to look forward to. I'm sure Caleb Williams will watch tomorrow closely and envision himself walking across that stage, unveiling a bust at some point as he hopes to have a Hall of Fame trajectory to his career as well. I know all of you are hopeful of that also. I'm hopeful you have a fantastic weekend, whether that involves watching the Hall of Fame, whether that involves watching the Olympic Games, whether it involves watching the Chicago Cubs try to keep their run going. A lot of great sports that are going to be out there, as well as Lollapalooza being right around the corner from me as well. So there's a lot happening in the city of Chicago and available to you to consume. So do your best to enjoy it and to do so safely, as now the weeks are ticking until the end of the summer. My thanks to Patrick Finley and Tony Andracki. Looking forward to catching up with Howard Balzer another time. Of course, congratulations, appreciations, and salutations to Alex Kuhn as well for finishing up another outstanding show. Great work, Alex. I appreciate all of you for listening in to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You know, a bit hurtful.
Do you see greatness in Caleb Williams?
you know, I haven't seen enough yet, but people I respect who have watched and said this guy has it, and that's what it's all about. It's poise and dominance in those big time situations. I don't think people would have said, I see greatness in Tom Brady in his first 3 weeks on the job. But he had those things, and that's what you're looking for. That's what I want to find out. Does Caleb Williams, he's got talent, he's got arm strength, he's got accuracy, athleticism. Does he have that it that you need in those big moments? That's what we're going to have to see.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's more of Tony Dungy with Mully and Haw from there in Canton, Ohio, as we all prepare to watch this current Hall of Fame class get enshrined tomorrow from Tom Benson's Hall of Fame Stadium. And he referenced, you know, no one in the first 3 weeks would have said they saw greatness in Tom Brady. I would argue the first 3 years, even though he had a Super Bowl championship by that point. But, you know, it took a while. He continued to refine his game. He continued to improve and evolve. And that's what the all-time greats end up doing to some extent, to a large extent, in all these different cases. How does your game continue to evolve? How do you continue to refine yourself? The version of Patrick Mahomes that just won this Super Bowl was a very different version of Patrick Mahomes that was the NFL MVP in his second year in the league, you know, but he has shown that requisite work ethic necessary to continue to do that and to make his game suit whatever situation it needs to suit to be the best version of himself for the Chiefs. It's part of the question that'll be there for Caleb Williams as he continues his path towards trying to become a great player for the Chicago Bears. I had a chance last week to have my latest conversation with his old college coach from both Oklahoma and USC, Lincoln Riley. And Lincoln Riley has put a variety of quarterbacks into the National Football League after playing for him and being in his offensive system. Caleb, just the latest amongst that group to not only win the Heisman Trophy, but go on to be the number one overall pick, as was the case with Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray and now Caleb Williams. Jalen Hurts, you know, has gone on to success after he transferred to Oklahoma to play for Lincoln Riley as well. He just didn't win the Heisman or become the number one overall pick, but he's not done too bad so far in the NFL. But here's a brief comment that Lincoln Riley had in response to a question I asked about his system and the transition from Caleb Williams to his upcoming quarterback, Miller Moss.
Yeah, you know, we had a little bit of a test drive in the Holiday Bowl, yeah. And obviously not just Miller, but really a lot of the young players at all positions, you know, we really featured in that game, and the guys handled it, you know, obviously really well in the win over Louisville. And so it was honestly an advantage to be able to have that opportunity, kind of the way that it played out. And yeah, listen, I've kind of, you know, been lucky enough to be a part of it before we have the high profile player that leaves and goes into the whatever pick in the draft, and then everybody's like, oh my God, what are you going to do now? Like, it's well, the next guy's going to come up, you know, like that's this college football. It's like how it works. So, you know, I'm excited about it. Sure, we'll be different. I mean, we were different in that game. We'll be certainly more different with whoever ends up being the guy, whether it's Miller or Jaden or whoever it is. We'll be different because of the skill sets that we're going to have. And so, but that's like the fun to me, is like adapting to what you have, what can your advantages be, and how can you put a product on the field no matter what your skill sets are that can go out and play at a high level. And so that's been our mindset. Yeah, we'll probably fair to say we'll be a little bit more on script. Yeah, probably that's you know, fair to say. But now Chicago fans are going to obviously love watching Caleb. He's phenomenal talent, and we had a great run together.
You've seen the success that Lincoln Riley quarterbacks have had, not only at the collegiate level, but in the National Football League. And his system isn't always one that allows the transition to the pro game to be easy, because he does have a lot of college principles. What would still be defined or thought of as college principles within the system, certainly the verbiage is a big thing that stands out there. But he's begun to make a bit of a transition in the way he operates in that regard at the college level also. A lot to look forward to. I'm sure Caleb Williams will watch tomorrow closely and envision himself walking across that stage, unveiling a bust at some point as he hopes to have a Hall of Fame trajectory to his career as well. I know all of you are hopeful of that also. I'm hopeful you have a fantastic weekend, whether that involves watching the Hall of Fame, whether that involves watching the Olympic Games, whether it involves watching the Chicago Cubs try to keep their run going. A lot of great sports that are going to be out there, as well as Lollapalooza being right around the corner from me as well. So there's a lot happening in the city of Chicago and available to you to consume. So do your best to enjoy it and to do so safely, as now the weeks are ticking until the end of the summer. My thanks to Patrick Finley and Tony Andracki. Looking forward to catching up with Howard Balzer another time. Of course, congratulations, appreciations, and salutations to Alex Kuhn as well for finishing up another outstanding show. Great work, Alex. I appreciate all of you for listening in to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You know, a bit hurtful.